welcome to Observations, wherever you may be. We've got Kirk and Scott here. Hello, fellas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to begin here before we return to Chapter 9 of Observations and tell the story of Noach and why it is pertinent to establishing a relationship with God and understanding the history of humanity. There is an ongoing struggle in the world right now with the truth, and we have the world based upon the votes of nations at about 95% in direct conflict with the truth. I don't think there has been a story in recent memory that explicitly demonstrates the corrupting power of religion as much as this one, which is Trump's announcement to name Jerusalem the capital of Israel. The United Nations voted 170-something to 9, two of those nations being the United States and Israel, and the only notable nation other than the United States and Israel to vote in favor of it was Honduras. Against Trump's declaration. And what's so astonishing about that is that the evidence of Jerusalem being the capital of Israel,
totally,
and of Israel belonging to the Israelis,
mm-hmm,
is better documented in ancient history than any other city, place, and people.
Mm-hmm.
There is no place on earth of that era. We're dealing now with 1000 BCE. At that time and that place, there is no other place that has as much written history and historical evidence proving this correlation as there is between King David, Jerusalem, Mount Moriah, what occurred on Mount Moriah with both the city of David and the Temple Mount, and the subsequent house of Yahweh, and the Israeli people under David and then later Solomon, and then the histories of all of the peoples around the world that interacted with them in this place, corroborating that they were there, including the Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Hittites, the Canaanites, the Greeks,
mm-hmm,
the Romans, the Byzantines, the Ottomans, and on and on and on it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Further,
mm-hmm,
on the opposite side, there is absolutely no evidence outside of that same testimony that there ever were such a people as Palestinians or a place called Palestine. And if that evidence that presents the story of David in Jerusalem is untrue, and it can't be untrue because it's verified in millions of ways, but if it were untrue, then there is no such thing as a place called Palestine or a Palestinian people. It is a complete and utter myth. And since it is true, and that is the only reference to these people, they are unknown otherwise because they had no language, they left no monuments, they left no record of themselves independently at all, other than some undistinguished graves, then they were invading terrorists who were expressly forbidden by Yahweh to call that place home. So to believe Muhammad's rubbish, that he rode a wild winged ass from Mecca one night when he was being assaulted for having made a polytheistic religion out of his original premise on Islam by announcing that there were three goddesses in addition to Allah in the Islamic pantheon, And he got up from his bed, allegedly, while he was sleeping with a six-year-old girl, his best friend's daughter, an act of pedophilia, and then flew that winged ass to Jerusalem to meet in the temple, which he was too stupid to know had been destroyed 6 centuries earlier. That he claimed to have met with all of the Israeli big shots, the prophetic big shots of history, and then leaped up to heaven by way of hell to meet with Allah, who said, "I want you to bow down to me 50 times a day." And on that lame story, which is obviously false, I mean, stunningly stupid, condemning the whole credibility of the Quran, Muslims the world over claim that Jerusalem belongs to them, which is why they built their trophy there, the Dome of the Hoofy Print, Dome of the Rock.
And the world agrees.
And the world, 95% to 5%, probably more than that, concurs. It is strictly a matter of religion over sense. There's very few things in all of human history that show the corruptive power of religion more bluntly, more boldly, more unambiguously than the claim of a people called Palestinians, a place called Palestine, and their capital being Jerusalem, and that these things do not belong to Israelis, is the story we're witnessing before our eyes.
Yeah.
But it does go one step further, and that is that the prophets that Yahweh inspired said that not only would Israel be reconstituted, not only would Israel claim Jerusalem again as her capital, but that terrorists surrounding her, vehemently religious and vicious, would attack her en masse after the world forces her to surrender her high ground right at her waist, Gaza and then the West Bank. And then after these terrorists destroy the nation of Syria, that they would flood into Israel by the millions as jihadists, raping and plundering as they go. With the news that we've been witnessing taking place over the last week or so throughout the Islamic world in reaction to the naming of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, we're witnessing all of the preamble to these things. And there was just another article that struck my eye this week that also spoke to this.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the pictures out of Aleppo and Homs and Fallujah.
Yes.
And now they're giving a more credible accounting of what happened in Mosul. And before the battle for Mosul, I said, you know, this is the most counterproductive thing that anyone could possibly do. Now, tens of thousands of civilians are going to die. The city is going to become a heap of ruins. It'll become nothing but a graveyard. Just as Aleppo had, Homs had, Fallujah had. The solution in the Islamic world to rooting out Islamic factions that they don't like is to destroy everything. Scorched earth. It's kind of like the United States dropping napalm and Agent Orange on Vietnam, unable to distinguish the good guys from the bad guys. You just kill them all.
Oh, that was the Civil War, too.
Yeah, Civil War is the same. So here we are. They have announced that Mosul's unlivable. Second largest city in Iraq. Unlivable. That's what's going to happen to Damascus. We're told that it's going to become a twisted heap of ruins. There'll be no one to live there, and Syria will fall. It's the triggering point for all of these things that we're witnessing. And you know, right now I'm in my translation. We're going to return to chapter 9 here today, then tonight we'll be back in chapter 19 of Observations for Our Time. But in my translating and writing research, I'm in chapter 20, which covers Yeshaya, Isaiah chapters 12 and 13. 12 is a glorious song of celebration. 13 precedes it, actually, in the chronology, and talks about Yahweh's return. Oh, is he mad? And God's just furious. He is so angry, and everything in sight is destroyed. People's faces just turn to blaze. They're stupefied. You know, here they're all there thinking that they have honoring God's call, a call of country and world to finally rid the world of these terrible people, the chosen people, the Jews. And yet here God shows up. And he wipes them out.
Good.
Hey, you know, one of the things that was interesting is that I was writing this, and it was obvious that they were marching off believing that they were doing so in the name of their God. And at this time, by the time of Armageddon, that battle, the only nation capable of bringing this number of troops into Israel would be China. And we know that also because the two calamities, the asteroid strike and the volcano that slides into the sea, Carne Viejo, it wipes out a third of the world's shipping. So, you know, the world's navies can't project a force anymore. And so the only way to get to Israel now will be a land route. And the only nation capable of doing that, the country that actually built the road, built the road, is China. And so I was thinking, what we think of the Chinese as being communists. Do you know that China today is the fastest growing Christian nation on earth? Do you know that by 2026, there'll be as many Christians in China as there are in the United States? And that by 2030, 3 years before Armageddon, China will be the most populous Christian country in the world.
Isn't that amazing?
Where there is Paul, there is anti-Semitism.
Wow.
So those are how the pieces are falling together. But, you know, you don't have to ride this train wreck. You can get off. There's an ark that was specifically built for those who don't wish to end up in that train wreck to board. And we covered this part of the story a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to retrace our steps and then move forward. So Yahweh saw and understood, as a result, that indeed the depravity, wrongdoing, and immorality, the corruption and destructive nature, in addition to the perverse attitude of mankind as the descendants of Adam, was excessive, being exalted throughout the region. Before I read the next part of this, I should say that as I translated Yahweh's appraisal of the conditions that made him so angry prior to his return, he used exactly the same words. He described humanity today and over the next 15 years using exactly the same words. And also, every inclination, conception, and motivation, and most especially the way ideas were formed and framed regarding his thoughts, intentions, and reasoning, which affected his judgment and perspective, were exclusively and continually wrong, without exception. And that ultimately is what brings us to Armageddon as we move to the future.
Yeah.
There will be fewer men and women who are right with God, then there is gold, is the term that Yahweh uses. In fact, he says, as descendants of Adam's, it'll be less than the gold of Ophir. I did a little math on the gold of Ophir.
Yeah.
And it equates to about 1,200 people.
Well, that's not like a good number. I mean, as far as it makes sense.
So we aren't going to have the world as a whole is going to be entirely and without exception wrong.
Yeah.
You know, there's this notion.
Every word in the
go ahead.
Bog you down or anything, but every word in those last two paragraphs you've read are raw words. You know, with
right. Yeah, they are.
And man's view. Man's
that's
view.
Right. That's yeah, they're all raw. They're all raw words.
Yeah,
they're man's man is leadership. Yeah.
Rotten to begin with. I mean, associated with them. It's raw.
Rosh Aleph. They're all raw words. You are correct. And it's the raw words again that permeate the latter days assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And what is what's astonishing about that is one of the most interesting raw words. There's two raw words that people don't typically associate with the raw community.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is ra'ah. Ra'ah has two denotations. One is shepherd, feeds the flock, nurtures, protects. The other is twists, perverts, destroys. And so he uses Ra'ah to speak of pastors, priests, those who claim to shepherd the flock, who are evil and destructive. And Ra'ah is there is a Ra'ah with without the the with the without the hay at the end. Yeah, the Ra'ah, one of the raw words that. That is typically translated neighbor, but that's not its meaning.
Mm.
Evil, corrupt.
Yeah, dysfunctional, impaired.
Twisted, impaired. Yes. So these are indeed all raw words, and you know there's this notion. General perception has always been part of the human nature. To try to blend in with the majority, believing that the majority is right. You know, if a jury convicts somebody, well, the majority was correct. That is a just verdict. But the majority has been wrong, consistently wrong, throughout all of history.
Yeah.
They're almost never right. You know, it doesn't matter who the king was that they empowered or the god that they worshipped. They're always wrong. You know, the majority of Americans are wrong in terms of their perceptions of the country, the perceptions of their military, the perceptions of their government, perceptions of their economy, their basis for their religion. No, the vast majority of people are wrong, and if something is popular, you can be assured it's wrong. You know, the opposite is true. And this has never been as ubiquitous as it is now with political correctness, because prior to political correctness, lies like religious lies, political lies, military lies, propagandist lies, they were all popular and accepted. But the truth wasn't rejected. Yeah, the truth wasn't necessarily rejected. With political correctness, not only are the lies now part of the fabric of the society, the truth is considered anathema.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is a great sin. Now you're condemned for promoting the truth. So it is they were continually and exclusively wrong every day without exception. So Yahweh, as a result of his compassion, was sorry and lamented, disappointed that he had engaged with the descendants of Adam in the material realm. He was distressed over what he had fashioned and formed, hurt by his creation's deliberate distortions with regard to his decisions and emotional response. This is one of the great insights that that few people appreciate. And that is to be compassionate, you must hate.
Yeah.
and that if you don't hate that which is constantly wrong, destructive, immoral, then you're showing no regard for, no concern for the few who would like to live their lives without such negative influences. You're not protecting them. And they deserve your protection.
Yeah. If your dog became rabid,
right,
and attacked your child, I mean, you shoot the dog. It may be your family dog, and you may love your dog, but it's rabid, and it's going to kill your family. So
correct,
you shoot the dog. I mean, come on.
You know, you may have a thing for snakes.
Yeah.
But you do not live a family of copperheads or water moccasins play among your child's nursery.
No.
You know, some people just might think that the black widow is a really handsome-looking spider. But don't let him crawl on your pillow.
No.
No. And so to be compassionate, one has to be distressed over these negative influences, murder, rape, pedophilia, incest, robbery, particularly religion, leading people astray. Then Yahweh said, I will remove the contamination of the descendants of Adam, which for the benefit of the relationship I brought into existence out of the Almighty's material realm. For concerning humankind, inclusive of the predatory beasts, the testimony of the slithering reptiles and the winged creatures of the spiritual realm, surely I regret as an expression of my sympathy that I have engaged with them.
Wow.
Kirk, when you pause for a moment and you think that the best Yahweh has right now on this planet are the few hundred of us that are part of his covenant, and we aren't much to draw to.
You may lift up a banner, but, you know.
Well, by comparison to the others relative to our relationship with him, I mean, yeah, we're diamonds.
Yeah, I know.
Or diamonds among reptilian discharge.
Because what he treasures, but we ain't much, pal.
Yeah. That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
And we're hundreds amongst billions.
Yeah. That's becoming very evident. The more you...
Yes.
It's so small.
So Yahweh's goal was to remove the contamination. And where was the contamination? It was within the souls, the minds of the descendants of Adam, those men and women imbued with a nesama, a conscience that they were using improperly. But Noach, the trustworthy guide to a beautifully prepared and restful spiritual home, attained, discovered, and experienced favorable acceptance in the sight of Yahweh. Do you think that was because Noach was perfect?
No, he knew the path.
No, but he knew that the path led away from what man was doing.
Right.
This, then, is the genealogical record and story of Noach, the trustworthy guide to a beautifully prepared and restful spiritual home, was individually right, and thus upright and vindicated. He was unobjectionable and perfected by being entirely correct with regard to the truth among his generation, his time, people, and place. Alongside the Almighty, Noach walked alone and independently. Speaks to our time, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's very few people who can just do the independent thing.
Yeah, and it's so interesting,
walk
too,
away.
that Noach walked alone, which means that he walked away from human religion, human politics, human militarism, human patriotism, the tribal system. He walked away from it.
Yeah.
And to walk away from the things of man, he walked alone with God. It is still the same way. And here it is, written clearly as the stain on the paper. And no one carrying this book around claiming it was inspired by God can figure it out. Instead, they walk into their church. They walk into their mosques. They walk into their synagogues. because that's where the crowd is. They walk to the crowd and embrace the crowd because they were wrong. Noah was right, and so he walked alone.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is, but it's the thing about Yahweh's testimony, if you get it right,
mm-hmm.
every sentence is something that you can dissect and analyze and scrutinize and apply to make your life richer.
Yeah, I've never been more on the page with you than recently. I mean, it's a growth. You know, you learn. Just really everything is, there are gems. When he said, observe my words,
yep.
words, he meant observe his words. They are really packed with
yep.
things when you break them down. It just amazes me sometimes.
And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's easy.
This ain't your language.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard. Well, particularly since many of the references are difficult to understand from today's perspective, or to use yesterday's words to describe current events.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's not it's like any discovery. If you're going to be an archaeologist, you'd better be prepared to get your toothbrush and push away the dirt. Right?
Yeah.
You don't do archaeology with a steam shovel. That's the same thing is true when you're using etymology to study Yah's word. You've got to go around every letter, every nuance and crease, every tittle, and extract the nuggets that are there.
Mm-hmm. And they are there, though.
Yes, and Noah, the trustworthy guide home, conceived and fathered three sons with Shem, the proper and designated name, who was the father of Yehudim, Ham, the passionately idolatrous sun worshiper, who was the father of Canaan and the forefather of Islam, and Yefesh, the popular deception, opening the broad and popular way which deceives, entices, and seduces the simple-minded, naive, and gullible, who was the forefather of the Greeks, Romans, Roman Catholics, Christians, and Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lesson for us.
Boy.
Now, this region was corrupt. He uses what has become one of my favorite metaphors, a slime pit, a putrid matters, reptilian discharge.
Sorry.
You know, if you study God's word enough, you start to think like him.
Yeah.
So now, this region was corrupt, a slime pit of putrid matters in the presence of the Almighty. And the realm was filled with the proclamation of and satisfied with the overwhelming abundance of malicious false testimony, destructive violence, cruel oppression, and vicious terrorism. Well, that sounds like today.
Right.
God observed and considered this region of the material realm. So now listen carefully. Be especially observant and notice that it was perverted and corrupt, and that she had become a swamp of murky ideas, a dark dungeon, which imprisoned the dead and dying, depriving them of their life and liberty. For indeed, every human prone to preaching was corrupting, because he had ravaged his victims with his perversions, which were the result of his way.
Yeah, you're not going to find that in Bibles.
And no.
Talk about prone to preaching, and you can't miss it if you look them up. That's what always amazes me, you know.
Yes.
It'll say one thing. You have a Masoretic text, and you have the numbering system, and you have a lexicons, and you look them all up, and it doesn't say what they wrote down.
Right.
Yeah,
right. They'll translate.
They must think you never look.
Yeah, they translate Bashar as the flesh, and the flesh was this thing. But if you look in the lexicons, the primary definition of Bashar is not flesh. It's not animal. It's preaching.
Yeah, it's the bare tidings.
It's preaching tidings that are presumed to be good,
mm-hmm.
i.e. the good news of Christianity.
Yeah.
That's what Bashar means. That's its primary definition. And God created the material realm. He created animals. He created flesh. He called them good. He's got nothing against flesh.
No.
Nothing.
No.
In fact, he's grieving because flesh is being destroyed by man. So to render Bashar flesh is to make nonsense of this. And it's so easy to get right. That's why I'm just so astonished that, you know, here we are without any qualifications, 15 years into this project.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of a handful of people that we've inspired within our community,
mm-hmm.
which is just the Covenant family, no one else is doing it.
I can't find anybody even, and most of them, I can't find anybody even interested enough to read 20 pages of your books to get to find out whether there's any reason to pursue it.
Yeah, I know.
But
it's so, what's so amazing is just how profound the insights are.
Mm-hmm.
How relevant they are.
Yeah. If you were worried that Christianity, we were lying to you about Christianity and religion in general. And you read this, and you know, what else would you, what do you think he's talking about? I mean, page after page after page of...
Yeah, particularly if you use BN and put it together, and you do what we did at the beginning of this session, where I said, the words that were just used, and you said they're all raw words,
mm-hmm.
the words that were just used to describe the conditions prior to the flood, depicting mankind's religious and vicious, corrupt, and twisted nature were exactly the same words that he used to describe the condition of mankind upon his return, which is why he's going to wipe out virtually all of humanity, making mankind rarer than gold.
That doesn't make you sit up and think?
And so you'd say, wait a minute, the Nephilim et al. Of this time are long gone.
Yes.
So who is he talking about here that is also pertinent to our time? And, you know, it's not hard to figure out if you make the connections.
Yeah. This ain't hard stuff.
No. So then God spoke while approaching Noach. And this is the nature of every relationship with Yahweh. Yahweh always introduces himself first. I don't think he introduces him. In fact, I'm certain that he does not introduce himself to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But he begins the relationship. He begins the relationship.
I have to read it where he spoke to you.
You, it's your choice then, just as if I was a young lady and you were pursuing me and you introduced yourself, it would be my choice as to whether or not I chose to respond or just turned away.
Mm-hmm.
When Yahweh pursues us, it's our choice.
Yes.
But no one,
well,
I don't think anyone in the history of humanity has come to know him that didn't receive an invitation first.
No.
A hello. A gentle tap on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Something to say, here I am. Here I am. I'd like to know you. I'd like to work with you. And by the way, it is my conclusion as well. I only have this from putting things together using the Hebrew BN, that God does not introduce himself to anyone or engage in developing a relationship with them unless he intends to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to work with him, if you do not wish to engage with him, there really is no reason to accept the invitation.
Is it?
Now, it's true that anybody on their own initiative who would go into the Torah and analyze who Yahweh is based upon what he wrote of himself in Bereshith, Genesis, and how he destroyed Babel and destroyed these vicious people on earth because they grieved him. They were too religious, too political, too militaristic, too vicious, and formed a relationship with Noah because he was right, and Noah listened to what he had to say and acted upon it. And then you follow that story through his relationship with Abraham without an introduction from God.
Mm-hmm.
You could accept the five conditions of the covenant. You could attend the seven Moed Mikre, the invitations to meet with God, and you could become part of his covenant family.
Yes.
I don't think anyone's ever done that.
No.
Personally, I don't think anyone's ever done that, not on their own initiative.
You know, well, I kick myself every day because, not every day, but I kick myself sometimes when I think about it. I told you that story. This, why can't I have what Abraham, the deal Abraham had?
Yeah.
Why didn't I? Well, eventually I found my way through reading what you wrote and then going from there. But,
yeah, you got
hard.
That deal.
You just don't do it infinitely. It's very, yeah. Very, very hard.
Yeah, that's the only deal there is.
Yeah.
But, and it's laid out very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll go out on a limb here and say.
Okay.
That I may have been the first person in 2,000 years, maybe 2,500 years,
mm-hmm.
to find it and figure it out.
Probably. I don't have another candidate to debate with you.
And I don't say that braggadociously because I didn't do it on my own. I started the same way that Noach started, although Noach was much better than me. But I started with a tap on the shoulder and a whisper in the ear. And say, I've got a job that needs to be done. And this is what I would like you to do. And then I played like I was Moshe and said, no, me, man, you got the wrong dude here. You need to go send somebody else. And, we did some negotiation, and we decided to agree to go to work. But had the 91st Psalm, Dode's masterpiece to God's intervention in our lives, not been in my pocket at the time of that introduction, I wouldn't have found it. Because it was actually that introduction that led me to writing a chapter for a book called Tea with Terrace, because immediately thereafter, in pursuit of the mission that I'd been asked to accomplish, I met with Al-Qaeda. And in meeting with Al-Qaeda, I learned why the Muslims were killing us based upon Muhammad's words and deeds. And so I wrote a book called Tea with Terrace, where one of the main characters is trying to demonstrate to another one of the main characters why she was a Christian. Now, as you know, I'm absolutely not a Christian. But she wanted to prove that while the Quran could not be trusted, that the Torah prophets and Psalms could be trusted. So she took 20 of the more interesting prophecies about the life and birth of Yosha and shared them with this character. And one of them is that he would be a descendant of Dode, and that the prophecy goes on to say that what he sins, I will not spare the rod. And it was that verse and writing that chapter that was changed my life and directed me to go into that story and into the language to figure out what was really being said, because I was certain that what I was reading in every Bible translation was wrong. And it indeed was. And so that began this journey of, well, if these translations are wrong, what does it really say? And that's how I found it. Just simply by rendering the words as they were originally intended. So, God spoke while approaching Noah. A limitation constraining every human prone to preaching has come. For I have noticed that indeed the region is filled with the proclamation of and satisfied with the overwhelming abundance of malicious false testimony, destructive violence, cruel oppression, and vicious terrorism. So because of their presence, now pay attention to me, listen carefully, and be especially observant, standing up and taking notice that they are corrupting the material realm. choose of your own volition to engage, working to make an ark of laminated and resinous wood, constructing rooms within the ship, and then cover her, including the house and also the outside, with pitch. Now, that is, that's a real mouthful.
Yeah.
Choose of your own volition.
That's
who's speaking?
Right there. I mean,
who's speaking? Yeah.
Your
yeah.
own volition. You choose.
You choose. That's I'm going to lay it out for you. I'm going to give you the opportunity to save you and your family from all of this. But it's your choice. I'm not going to make it for you. That is consistent with the covenant. That is consistent with salvation. God laid out a set of instructions. If you listen to Him and you act upon those instructions, He will let you engage in your own salvation. But you will participate, or it will not occur. This muck about salvation is a gift of grace is absolutely preposterous. You either engage, or it doesn't happen. You either listen, or you don't know what to do. And it's your choice. Now, it's also interesting that he told him to build a ship. To build a ship. You know where he was?
Yeah.
You know,
very land. He was very much a land lover.
You know, he was just outside of what once was Eden, which is now buried under the Lake Van in eastern Turkey. You know, he's a long way
from the coast.
From the coast. I mean, the closest water would be the freshwater lake at the time of the Black Sea. The Black Sea was freshwater at the time, of highly, highly, highly populated. He wasn't too far from there. But he had walked away from all the communities that were on the coast of the Black Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Build a ship. This specifically and singularly exists to show the way to the benefits of the relationship. Make her an ark of 300 cubits. 300 cubits is, I mean, a cubit is 18 inches, approximately. Tip of the finger to the elbow. And 50 cubits in width. That's big!
That's one big boat.
And 30 forearms in height. You should make a roof for the ark. Now he's saying, okay, you know, we're not talking about having a shipyard here.
Yeah.
We don't have cranes. We don't have sawmills. That's why it's resinous wood, by the way. It's the only way that he could carry small pieces of wood, relatively small pieces of wood, and then glue them together to create a structure that's actually stronger than if it was one piece of wood. And the ark has been discovered.
A lot of that today.
Yeah, the ark has been discovered. It is at these dimensions. It is in the foothills of the mountains of Ararat. And the metallurgy is really interesting, and the bolts that that held it together. So there was a very sophisticated amount of listening and doing that was entailed in making this ship. And we've devoted an entire chapter of yada yada to the nature of the ark. It is the exact same proportions of the largest, most stable ships today. Therefore, to a cubit, and in consideration of the forearm, she yearns to be completely, to completely fulfill her purpose as part of moving in the direction of ascending to a higher dimension. So therefore, place a doorway in her side, a lower second and third she wants you to make. Now, you just read that and say, okay, what in the world is going on? What is he talking about? Forearms? What about the boat? Is the ark is yearning? Higher dimensions?
Mm-hmm.
One door, then two more?
Yeah.
Well, you got to think it through.
Yeah.
First of all, how is Yahweh predicting? How is Yahweh presenting himself? What's the first letter in his name?
A hand reaching down,
right.
God reaching
right.
down to lift up.
A forearm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So in consideration of the forearm.
Yes, forearm, yep.
Yeah, consideration of the forearm. This is Yahweh reaching down to completely fulfill his purpose, to lift you up to a higher dimension. Therefore, place a door in her side. What is the doorway to Yahweh's home? What's the doorway to life?
It's the Passover peace offering.
That's right. That is correct. Place the doorway in the side. What about the second and third doorway? There must be a second and third doorway to Yah's house, right?
Or a second and third door somewhere else.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Second and third doors go to the other potential destinations for human souls.
Right.
Annihilation or eternal incarceration and Sheol. That's why there are three doors. Now, look up and pay attention to me. I myself am going to return and bring the flood of waters upon the region to devastate and destroy corruption of every human prone to preaching in whom there is a living spirit from beneath the surface of a spiritual realm. All who are in the region will pass away. Now, he's not here to kill every animal, not here to kill every human, not here to destroy the entire earth. This is a specific region.
Not the whole world, no.
Right,
no.
And he's later he will say it's all those with the Nesama. They would be the descendants of Adam, not all of humanity. And the reason he has to
build the ark with all the animals to replenish that area, had it not.
Yeah, correct.
Had it been anything else?
Yeah, it's just the animals to replenish the animals in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only way to rid the world of the contamination, because the contamination was man. Then I will take a stand, establishing, as a result, my covenant with you. Well, that ought to have been a clue that this story can be understood as the means to participate in the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how hard that is to translate. Then I will take a stand, establishing, as a result, my covenant with you. And you will come to enter and be included within the ark. You and your sons, your wife, your wife's, your sons' wives with you. Now, is there any other artifact associated with Yahweh that's important that is called an ark?
It's the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, the Ark of the Covenant. So here he is going to establish this ark that is part of establishing his covenant, and then he would later have an Ark of the Covenant. Maybe there's a connection between them.
I would guess so.
Yeah. So Noah, the trustworthy guide to a beautiful, prepared home, engaged and acted in a manner consistent with everything which beneficially shows the way to the relationship that God had instructed of him. Correctly doing so, acting and engaging accordingly, expending the effort to accomplish the task and profiting from it, endeavoring to acquire the knowledge which leads to understanding. You want to be part of the covenant. You need to listen to what God said and act accordingly. You can't tune him out. You can't do whatever you damn well please. You can't assume that he knows the quality of your heart. You can't assume that he's going to judge on a scale of good and bad. He isn't. You want to be aboard the ark. You need to listen to the instructions and do what he has asked.
Choose the proper door.
Right. It isn't hard, but it is straightforward. And there's no way around it. No one got aboard this ark by slingshot. No one jumped out of a tall tree and just happened to land on board.
Well,
they were all invited. Guard?
It picks you up at a certain appointed times.
Yeah.
It's only at the port at certain
mm-hmm.
times. If you're not going to get on the boat, you can't swim out to the ocean and jump on the boat. You have to be there at the times that it's going to be there.
Correct. And in this case, you'd better listen to what the architect said and build it according to those specs. And then do what he said. Otherwise, you're on your own.
Which, to be fair, mm-hmm. I mean, we both, when we were doing Shattering Myths, that one lady, she understood what we were saying. She said that everything... She liked everything she heard, about the covenant. She just said that I can't do that because I'll never see my kid again.
That's right.
Do you remember that lady?
She's choosing
to do that.
Right.
Which is fine. You know, he's not going to punish her, or she's not going to hell, or...
Nor is she going to see her kid again.
But she ain't going to see her kid again, either.
No.
That's a choice she's making. So there you go.
Yeah. She couldn't live with the thought that she would not see her kid again. And so, but that is true for so many of us in the covenant. And you quickly lose your... I don't know what the right word is, but you don't. It doesn't bother you anymore after a while that, yes, you have loved ones in this life who you will not see in the next. And you realize that you do your best to be available to explain what the instructions are and why it's in their interest to avail themselves of it. But it's their choice. Just as it was Noah's choice, it's their choice, and they will choose the path that they want to follow, not our jobs to coerce them.
And I told you the story of our next door neighbor when we were just starting to read Yada Yah, and Tara and I went next door and we had a glass of wine with our next door neighbor. She's pretty friendly, and we told her this. We told her these things, and we're sharing with her the thing that she was most pleased about. And the only thing she didn't care about Yahweh. She was just so thrilled that she wasn't going to go to hell, that there was a third option. That made her happy.
Yeah.
And I had another experience with one of my students whose father had died, and he had rejected Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And she always worried about him, but she didn't care about much of anything I said. Even though she thought, well, it would more disturb her, but she was delighted that her father was not suffering.
Yeah, and you know, there is a...
If that's what you want, Desi, yeah, I have a plan for that, too.
No, I think there's a beauty from that.
Yeah.
No, I think there's a beautiful thing that Yah created life and this marvelous blue and green planet to experience it on with free will and in the Sama and all the capacity that we have as humans. And in the construct of family, where two people can come together and conceive and raise children in a home and work for each other's betterment, that within that construct, there is the opportunity to choose to go beyond it and get to know the Creator, to just focus on the mundane of the world, or to work against Him. And everybody has a path that they'll go down, and that those who just choose to enjoy or spend all their time preoccupied with the mundane, there should be no penalty for them.
Well, and I think that's the reason why it becomes easier over time. You begin to realize that this is their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell them so many things, and that this is the choice they're making. And the thing that I've always told, because I'll probably never see my father. You know, I'll never, he's when he passes away, that's it. And he's one of my favorite people. But the thing that I always told him is, all right, if you're not going to do this, just make sure you're not on that other side and you're drawing people away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part to where I've
Correct.
Been very adamant about how, you can make your choice, but I will not allow any sort of the other side of that.
Yeah. Don't be proselytizing for religion.
No.
Don't be proselytizing for politics or patriotism. Don't be doing those things. Back off. And do what, at the very least, do the first half of what Noah did. Walk away from those things. Live your life and focus on your family and friends, but don't lead people astray.
Yeah. Well, that's why I can't engage in my family, though, because they're so political and so religious. It just goes nowhere.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things to do, though, is give my aunt a hard time. She's a pretty hard-leaning left person, and I do enjoy when I see her that I get to give her a hard time about that.
She's a socialist secular humanist?
Yes. So, one issue voters, basically.
Oh, okay. All right. So, yeah, there's a lot of those that, whatever their one issue, is most resonates with a candidate could be pro-life, could be pro-choice, could be, pro-guns, could be, anti-religion in society, you know, whatever it may be.
Her daughter is a social secular humanist, though.
Yeah.
Which my favorite thing is that she's also a vegetarian, which I always like. She's a very strict vegetarian. She won't eat any sort of animal product. And when I asked her why, she was like, because it's killing of an animal. But she's pro-abortion. And when I point this out to her, it goes nowhere with her.
Little conflict there.
Yeah.
Well.
And these are, I mean, when I say I'm joking with them, I do actually like these people, and, you know, I do have fun with them, but I do also poke fun at them.
Yeah, well, the liberal agenda is no more sane than is the religious agenda.
No, not at all.
Yeah, they're equally insane. So Yahweh was saw, perceived, and understood as a result that indeed the depravity, wrongdoing, destructive nature, and perverse attitude of mankind, these descendants of Adam's, was excessive and being exalted throughout the region. And also that every inclination, conception, and motivation, most especially the way that ideas are formed regarding his thoughts and inclinations, musings, and plans, which would affect his judgment and perception, were continuously and constantly, exclusively wrong, every day without exception. Now, that's a return to the first passage we read, but here we do have the insights that leads to it. And the Hebrew words, for example, the last word is ra. The one before that was rock. What you have is a condition where people have been conditioned principally by the most influential force in human history, religion, to believe rather than think. And their belief can be shaped in whatever way the priesthood and the aristocracy believes serves their interests. And their interests are never the same as God's. Their interests are never the same as the people's in general. And so through religion, it's the ultimate broad scope means of making most everyone wrong most all of the time. And that's how we began our program today, was specifically talking about the vote on Israel being the capital of, or Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. Most everyone the world over is wrong.
Yeah.
And it's religion that have led them to being wrong.
Yeah.
And they're belligerent about being wrong. Their intentions are wrong, their musings are wrong, their reasonings are wrong, their plans are wrong. The way they form ideas is wrong. It's all a direct consequence of religion.
Well, I don't know how you can tell a country that that's not their capital. Isn't that where you normally put your embassies and stuff?
Yes, but you see, the world doesn't want God's chosen. The world is more influenced, far more influenced by HaSatan, the adversary, than it is by Yahweh. And the adversary wants to present himself as God, and the easiest way for him to do that is to renounce the witness of those dastardly Jews. So if Jerusalem and Israel and the testimony of Jews is obliterated, then Satan can continue to be worshipped as God without anyone knowing the better. We wouldn't know the better if it wasn't for the witness Yahweh provided through these people. So over the course of many years, and I've had the opportunity to lead readers on a wide variety of investigations as we have sought to understand something that God has revealed along the way. And without exception, not only have our adventures and learning been rewarded, we've always found Yahweh affirming what we discovered, usually in a subsequent statement. This is true. today.